Good morning and welcome to our Ag in Uncertain Times webinar on food safety for small-scale farmers. This webinar is brought to you by the USDA Office of Advocacy and Outreach and the Western Extension Committee Ag in Uncertain Times team. And technology is hosted by Montana State University Cooperative Extension. I am Romero Lobo and I'm going to be your MC for today. I'm a Small Farms and Agricultural Economics Advisor with the University of California Cooperative Extension in San Diego County. Our speaker today is Paul Vozan, a Farm Advisor with the University of California Cooperative Extension in Sonoma County. Before we get going with our seminar today, I'd like to go over a few details about how you can interact with our presenter this morning. You can use the Q&A answer window on your monitor to ask questions and click the enter button to send that question to the webinar team, and then your question will be asked to the presenter at the end of the session. You can also alternate between a share window, or you can toggle to a full screen window by pressing the full screen button on the top right corner of your monitor. And you can alternate between these two approaches and find one that makes you more comfortable with and enjoy the webinar that way. Before we get going, we have a few questions we would like to ask just to get a better idea of where you guys, where you as participants are located. And so that we have a sense of what issues are coming from each region of the U.S. So, John, could we please have the first question for the audience and participants? Could you please respond to them as they go? While you answer the questions, I will introduce our first speaker for the day, Mr. Okay, questions on the screen. Please tell us about yourself. Thanks so much. Could we please go to the next question? What part of the U.S. are you, where is your main place of business located? What region of the U.S.? If you can tell us that, please. Thank you. Which of the following statements best describe you? Thank you. Including yourself, how many individuals are participating in this webinar from your location? Thank you. We will now introduce our first speaker this morning, or actually our only speaker for the English version of our webinar this morning. And Paul Vozan is going to be our presenter this morning. And he's been a University of California Cooperative Extension Farm Advisor in Sonoma and Marin County since 1980. He works in the areas of fruit trees, berries, specialty vegetables, pest control, and marketing of farm products. And he also manages the Master Gardener and Sudden Oak Death programs. Paul was one of the founders of the Sebastopol Apple Promotion Committee in 1982. He was a co-founder of the Sonoma County Ag Marketing Program in 1986 and the California Olive Oil Council in 1990. He's developed statewide and international expertise in olive oil production, processing, and sensory evaluation, including the management of the first olive oil taste panel in the USA to become recognized by the International Olive Oil Council since 2001. He teaches many UCHO courses and seminars on specialty crops production, continues to work very closely with the Santa Rosa Junior Community College Sustainable Ag Program, and has recently completed a number of studies on coastal olive oil production. Like I mentioned, he's coordinated the Sonoma County Master Gardener Program for over 30 years. So, Paul, thanks for joining us this morning, and welcome to your webinar, and go ahead, the floor is yours.
Okay, good morning, everybody. Produce safety is, as you know, is extremely important. Could you advance to the next slide, showing the cooperative extension, your local door to resources of the University of California? Can you go to the next slide? There are 10 of us who were involved in the development of this program, most of them working with specifically with small-scale farmers. There are a couple of specialists. The person in the middle there, Shermaine Hardesty, and then also Trevor Suslow is a specialist with the University of California. But the rest of us are small-scale farm advisors working with various people in different counties, and we got together because there was a need and an interest in food safety, and small-scale farmers are very concerned about how is this going to affect me. And so go to the next slide. We put together this, which is essentially a summary of common sense methods for reducing the potential for food safety problems in produce. And it essentially involves the four W's that you see there, water, wildlife, waste, and workers, plus an element to assure that you have traceability for the products coming off of your farm, an assurance that you've, as long as you're going to do all these things, you might as well document it. And then if you want to take it the next step further, you can not only self-certify, but then go on and become certified by a third-party auditor. So go to the next slide. We're going to cover today produce, essentially growing, harvesting, packing, and transporting produce. We are not going to cover food preparation, processing, or meat, eggs, and dairy. Those things would have to be looked at and covered in other ways. Go on to the next one. Essentially, is there anything more important than food safety? There really isn't. Go to the next slide. And if it's not safe, we're in a lot of trouble, because not only is it going to affect you and your farm, but we've seen a number of cases where we've had problems with various products and produce, and that essentially leads to huge problems in the market. When it happens to those commodities, the market for those commodities drops down, and it affects a lot of people. And plus, of course, it also affects the people who have become ill or, God forbid, who have been killed by something that is a pathogen or something like that that gets into our food system. So this is extremely important. Let's go on to the next one. Over a 13-year period from 1996 to 2009, based on 532 outbreaks, 70% of those are bacterial. So bacteria is the primary element conveying organism that's causing most of the problems. You can see 17% there, chemical contamination, and then a few others from parasites, viral, and unknown. So next slide. The vehicle to transmit or that's causing the problems here, you can see produce represents 16.4%. If you go back one, 5.8% is sprouts. I would consider that produce as well. But you can see seafood, there's a significant aspect to it, and also eggs. But we're just going to be concentrating on produce. So if you go to the next slide, the types of produce associated with outbreaks, again, during the same 13-year period from 1996 to 2009, were primarily leafy greens, melons, and tomatoes. But you can also see that a number of other things, as far as produce, have been associated with these outbreaks, including berries, green onions, herbs, and even some unknown things. All right, the next slide. A lot of you are probably small-scale farmers, and you're saying, well, this doesn't affect me because I'm a small-scale farmer and I can control all these things. Well, we've also seen problems with small-scale farms being able to transmit and cause potential food safety problems. Go on to the next slide. One of the primary examples was local fresh strawberries produced in Northwest Oregon in 2011, sold at U-Picks and farm stands and farmers markets. and 14 people got sick and one person died from that. We think it was probably from wildlife and droppings from deer getting in onto the strawberries, but I don't know if they've ever exactly, you know, found out for sure what that is, but that was probably the method of contamination. On the next slide. So produce is getting a lot of attention because there have been a number of outbreaks, and the FDA responded in 1998 by producing these good agricultural practices, also called GAPs. And then in 2010, we've had federal legislation passed by Congress. Next slide. You can see the Food Safety Modernization Act, also the FSMA. We're going to talk about it as FSMA. And you can see the website URL there if you want to go to that. Again, passed by Congress in 2010, applies to fruits, vegetables, and processed food. Again, it does not apply to meat and poultry and dairy. Was released in January of 2013, and we're still in a comment period right now. You have an ability to comment on this. It was extended until September 16th, 2013. So next slide. There are three areas of primary concern here, which involves the practices for fruit and vegetable production and harvest, and then there would be another aspect of this for facilities that are packing and then would need to be registered, and then also for traceability and record keeping. And we're going to be talking primarily about practices for fruit and vegetable production and also traceability. Next slide. Now, small farms, there is an exemption for small farms here if you can meet all of the following criteria: 50% direct marketed to consumers, stores, and restaurants. And direct marketing means within the same state or within 275 miles. And your total sales have to be less than $500,000 gross. That's over a three-year period, average over a three-year period. And you have to be able to provide your name, address, and phone number provided to the customers. Sounds pretty good for small-scale farmers. You can immediately say, well, hey, this doesn't pertain to me. But go on to the next slide. That may not be all there is to it, because you're going to probably have, beyond the feds in this, you're probably going to have county, state, and local governments looking at food safety issues regarding produce, and they may put some additional requirements or more stringent requirements that would actually include regulations for small-scale farmers. And if you go on to the next slide, we also have the customers who are going to be buying these products saying, well, wait a minute, we want to be assured that these products are going to be safe. And we've had some instances where insurance companies actually said, wait a minute, we're not going to provide you with insurance, or we're going to cancel your policy or increase the premiums unless you have some type of documented food safety program. So the next slide also shows here some probable future requirements from schools, farmers markets, grocery stores, or even if you make donations to food banks. And I think one of the primary ones here are going to be grocery stores. If you sell wholesale to grocery stores and they come back and say, hey, wait a minute, we want to make sure we're covered here. We want to make sure that all the products that come into our store are safe. And so therefore, we want to see a documented food safety plan from you as a producer if you want to sell to us. Go on to the next slide. So, commodity groups, so there are a number of commodity groups nationwide, and a lot of them here in California. You can see the list of them there on the left. And you can go to these commodity group websites, and they've produced manuals, most of them, that you can see the pictures of the manuals there, that go through a lot of the details of what they deem necessary in order to be able to have safe produce produced with their specific commodity. So you can get a lot of more information if you belong to one of these commodity groups or you're growing these products and you want to get information from one of those commodity groups. Okay, the next slide. How much should I do? How much should you do as a farmer? Well, you can take this to several different levels. We're going to primarily be talking about the first three on there, and we're going to go through now some common sense, good agricultural practices that if you follow, you should be able to produce safe food without any problem. And then if you're going to do that, you might as well develop a food safety plan on your farm that that documents that and can follow that all the way through. And then if you want to take it to the next level, you could download a template that we have at the end of this, and conduct a self-audit and do self-certification. And then if you're required to do this, or if you feel like you want to do this, actually take it to the fourth step where you would hire a third-party auditor, and they would come in and audit your farm for you and make sure that you're in total compliance. Okay, the next slide. What are some of these common sense good agricultural practices? Well, let's start with a map. You have to have a map of your farm. So you can see all the things that you'd want to have on that map, and this just makes sense. People need to know. Everybody needs to know, you know, what's on that farm, what's surrounding that farm. Are there schools nearby? Are there other agricultural operations nearby? Are there livestock operations nearby? Where are the wells? Where are the roads? Where is everything located? So you have to have a map. Next slide. Creating a map, you can draw one by hand. You can download one from Google. It's probably the easiest and best way to do it if you're computer savvy. You can use a previous map that you've already submitted. If you're an organic grower, you have to have a map depicting everything on your farm as an organic grower. So next slide is just an example of a map that we downloaded from Google Earth, and you can, Google Earth allows you to actually draw right on there, and you can put on there you know, everything that's listed here. You can see where the toilets are, the roads, the well, the break areas, what's nearby, there's a school nearby here, et cetera, et cetera, and then you can print that out. You've got a pretty decent map also showing the specific fields where everything is being grown. And of course, you're going to have to update this because those fields, particularly the small-scale farmer, are going to change on a fairly frequent basis. After you harvest something, you take it out, put something else new in there, you're going to want to change it. So actually having it electronically like this is a great way to do it. But you don't need to. If you go to the next slide, you can draw a map by hand, and that's perfectly fine. Now, after you've got a map, go to the next slide, you need to document what's been done on this farm previously. Or if you've owned it for a long time, then you know what's happened there previously, and you're probably not going to do too much to document this. But if it's a brand new farm, you're going to want to know what's been applied here in the past. And of course, you can look at the horrific scenarios of this was a toxic waste dump, or this was a municipal storage for whatever. Hopefully not. But you need to document that and write that down as part of your plan and indicate if there has been anything done on this farm in the past, what's been done to mitigate that. The next one shows an example of some horses adjacent to a farm, or if you've got livestock adjacent to a farm. They put in a ditch and a burn to prevent any runoff. So if you get a lot of rain, you wouldn't want any runoff from the manures or from the droppings from those animals to be able to move back into the farm. So something's been done essentially to mitigate that situation where you are going to stop potential runoff from an adjacent field. Okay, next slide. So here's the first W, water. You have to make sure you've got clean water. Makes sense. And so you need to know the source of your water, of course. Go to the next slide. If you're pulling water from the surface, you've got a potential contamination from all kinds of things, and you need to know what's upstream if you're pulling surface waters that you're using for irrigation. And so that's very important to know. If you go to the next slide, shows this outbreak in 2006 from E. coli, contaminated. This was from contaminated irrigation water, they believe from feral pigs, and 276 people got sick, and three people died from it. We believe it was contamination from feces from feral pigs that got into irrigation water and was applied to the spinach. So knowing where that irrigation water source is and preventing any type of surface contamination is really important. You can get contamination from a lot of different things. Bacterial, viruses, waste, nitrates, organic chemicals, synthetic chemicals, heavy metals, all kinds of things. So you need to make sure that you don't have those contaminations. Next slide. And wells are going to require a backflow preventer. So you have to have a backflow preventer on there. Next slide shows an animal burrow. If you look right down towards the base of that well, you can see it looks like a small dark hole there. This is a potential problem. If you've got animal burrows, it's probably a ground squirrel burrow, digging down next to the well head, if we get a big rainfall and you've got surface water able to run down and get down into the wellhead, this should be inspected and should be corrected if that's a potential source of contamination. The next one, next slide, shows the potential for fertilizer contamination. Here shows a wellhead and a pump there with an engine pumping fertilizer into the system, and everything should be done to assure that you're not going to have contamination of those fertilizers or anything else getting into the system. So this has to have the right backflow preventers and all those different kinds of things. Okay, next slide. The primary thing is you're going to really need to do as a small-scale farmer is to make sure that you test your water. And you've got microbial testing, and bacteria is the most important one, and you're going to want to keep records of these tests. We'll have the next slide. If you have well water, you're going to want to test it at least once a year at the beginning of the season. If you've got canal, pond, or river water, you're going to want to test that every 3 months during the season. Municipal water, just get the records from the municipality because they keep records specifically of the contamination or whatever's in that water, hopefully free from contamination. Next slide. As I said earlier, the main problem is bacteria. So when you get a water test, you're gonna see in this water test, we've got an example of one here later, you can have it tested for several different things. A total coliform, fecal coliform, a generic E. coli, or specifically this E. coli 157H7, which is a known human pathogen. Now, most water tests are not going to test for E. coli 157H7. They're going to test for a generic E. coli fecal coliform, which indicates the potential for surface contamination that's gotten into this water. Next slide. Now, we don't have an exact standard. We don't have an exact number. So we're using a guideline here that came from the EPA for recreational waters. That guideline, and you can see the website here again that you can go to if you want to look more specifically at that guideline. But that guideline basically says 126 E. coli units per 100, or E. coli per 100 milliliter sample. That's the kind of the general guideline that we're using, basically in the absence of anything better. So the next slide shows, you sent your sample in, your water sample in, and I guess it says 23 on there, greater than 23. So they've measured this, and you've got a certain amount of coliform bacteria in there. In this case, it's less than 126, so it's not a problem. The water's safe to use for irrigation, safe to use for your farm. So this is an example of what that water test is going to look like. If you've got greater than 126, you're going to have to do something else to treat that water so that it brings that coliform level down. Okay, next slide. After you've essentially assured that you've got safe, clean water, then you want to, and I've included both of these together, waste and wildlife, because waste could come from wildlife or it could come from livestock, managing livestock on your farm. But the primary problem here is animal feces. This is the primary source of these bacterial contaminants that can come in and have caused a lot of these outbreaks. So that's really what we're concerned about here. So how are you managing waste that you're going to be applying, or how are you managing to exclude wildlife from your farm? So let's go to the next slide. Of course, one of the main ones would be the potential contamination that you might do yourself by applying either untreated or treated manure or improperly treated manures, applying composts, or allowing livestock to graze those fields and not removing that livestock in a timely manner, or having a livestock in there, or having any other source of contaminants from wildlife in there while there's actual produce growing and fairly near to harvest within the fields. So next one, this gives you some general guidelines. You want to keep compost and manure handling as far away from the produce production facilities and the fields as you possibly can, so within your farm. And use the barriers. There should be either a ditch or a burn that prevents any runoff from those piles of manure or compost from getting into and contaminating any parts of your field. The compost, if you're going to be using compost, should have reached the minimum temperatures that compost need to reach in order to kill a lot of these, which is usually 140 to 160 degrees Fahrenheit. And then you want to maximize the time between application and harvest. So here's the general guideline. If you're going to be incorporating raw manures, you need to do that 2 weeks prior to planting or 120 days prior to harvest. So again, raw manures either 2 weeks prior to planting or 120 days prior to harvest. For compost, if it's good compost and mature, well-done compost, 45 days prior to harvest. So those are the general guidelines for applications of manures and composts prior to harvest. Then you want to make sure, by the next slide, you want to make sure that any livestock nearby are not going to be potentially contaminating your fields. By the way, this is a picture of Sonoma County, so sort of right in my backyard here. Next picture is showing pasture runoff from rain. So if you get, if you've got livestock in an area and it rains hard and you've got runoff coming into your fields, that's a problem. So you need to prevent that. You need to put a berm up or a ditch up or something that prevents runoff from any type of livestock area into your fields. And next slide. Now, if you're actually going to use livestock, either, you know, sheep or goats or cattle or pigs or something, or in this case, wheat or geese going out into a field, then you're looking at removing those 120 days prior to harvest. Next slide. Of course, there are some things you can't control. I mean, this might sound like, ridiculous, but you can't control some things. I mean, it's just nature and it's a farm. Turkeys can fly over and jump over just about any kind of fence. But if you can't control those types of things, then you need to monitor for the presence of fecal material in your fields. So the next slide, just basically repeating the same thing, you need to go out and take a look. If you've got deer, or if you've got turkeys, or if you've got other things coming in there, and you've got fecal matter in those fields, well, then those areas shouldn't be harvested. Those areas really can't be harvested. Next slide shows what some of the things are that you can do. Of course, you can exclude them with fences. I'm talking about either wildlife or livestock, and manage them with, this shows a propane cannon to get birds away. But you just have to really use common sense here and avoid fields or do things within those fields to prevent obvious problems from either livestock or wildlife contamination. And if you've got wildlife or livestock confined in there, they need to be removed. Okay, let's go on to the next slide. And let's go to the next W, which is worker health and hygiene. And I've got several slides here to talk about various aspects of workers. Workers are extremely important in posing a risk. If you go to the next one, human body carries a wide variety of pathogens, and primarily from human feces. So I know we all hate to talk about it, but that's really the source that we're talking about here. That's really the contaminant. That's really the problem. And especially if you've got workers that are sick. And this is where a lot of problems come from. And let's go on to the next one. Look at some of the outbreaks here associated with infected workers from 1987 through 2003. From all kinds of different produce, from berries to greens, to herbs and the different types of pathogens involved, and then look at the number of cases here, hundreds and hundreds of cases. So worker contamination of produce is really a serious issue. Go to the next slide. 93% of outbreaks are related to food handlers involve sick workers. So again, it emphasizes the importance of workers handling produce and how they can contaminate produce. So the very first thing, is you have to have some type of a policy so that your workers aren't coming to work when they're sick. So you need to tell them, if you're coming to work sick, or if you're sick, you need to be assigned to do something else, or don't come back to work until you're not sick anymore. Well, of course, workers aren't going to like that, particularly if they are earning their living from working on your farm, and it's a hardship to them not working and not getting paid, but it's really a hardship if they're contaminating produce and it creates a safety issue. So that really supersedes anything. And then the next slide says you got to have first aid and first aid kits and train people about first aid. Of course, first aid might involve a number of things, but one of the primary things would be blood. You can't have blood contaminating produce, and they need to know where the first aid kit is. They need to know something about dressing those wounds. And then if you do have any produce that does get contaminated with blood or any other bodily fluids, that produce obviously cannot be packed and shipped. Okay, next slide involves, we come back to the issue of the human feces. And all of these regulations are OSHA regulations. A lot of you are conforming to these already, but you need to follow these regulations. This is, you know, certain number of toilets for certain number of employees. They have to be clean. OSHA has all these regulations pretty much specifically written out. Next slide. But you also have to remember these have to be kept clean, and you have to document that, and when it's cleaned. Here's an example of a voluntary audit we went and visited in California where they have the outhouses there, and of course somebody's going to come in with a hose and clean those out and squirt those out every once in a while. And you can see if the water runs out, and you can see the tractor marks down below that. So if you had contaminated water that came down and a tractor drove through there and got that on the tractor tires and got out into your field, now you have potentially contaminated the field. So you have to think about all of the different aspects of this. And the basic idea is I'm trying to keep bacteria out of my fields, bacteria off of the hands of my workers, so that doesn't get transmitted to the produce. And, of course, the next thing is, the next slide is you have to have a hand-washing policy. You have to have people trained, and you have to tell them that they need to wash their hands all the time, before work, during break, or after breaks, after using the toilet, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then you want to document that. You document that they've been trained, have them sign it. Okay, I've been trained in the hand-washing policy, and hopefully enforce it and have them do it. The next slide, break areas are important. You have to have workers, designated break areas for workers, hand-washing facilities nearby should be listed on your map. Everything has to be clean, and, you know, no smoking, chewing tobacco, gum, or other kinds of things outside the break area. The break areas for taking a break and eating and drinking, et cetera. And the next slide, I've already mentioned this, worker training is really important. There's a lot of manuals available to train workers in Spanish and English and other languages. And within those, next slide, you've got usually a template in there for record keeping. There's also a record keeping template at the end of this in our farm safety plan or food safety plan template. And so you document the date, when they were trained, what they were trained on, and have them sign it. Now you've got a record of it. Okay, go on to the next slide. Let's talk about harvesting and transporting produce and some of the things that are necessary. Next slide. Obviously, everything has to be clean. So all of the containers that you're using out in the field to harvest produce into, transport produce, has to be clean. The best way to clean that, of course, is just to get them, squirt the mud off or anything else that's on there, but is also to use 1 tablespoon of bleach per gallon of water, and that will essentially disinfect those containers and keep them nice and clean. And then, of course, common sense, keep them free from oil and grease and broken glass and et cetera, anything else that might contaminate that. And then if you do get some contamination, that produce needs to be thrown away and can't get into the food chain. All right, taking one step further, next slide. If you're actually washing the produce, one of the important things to understand this, the last bullet point there, is that you're not trying to sterilize this produce. You can't really, you can't sterilize it. But what you can do is you can, if you've got some small source of contamination, bacterial contamination particularly, that you're not going to expand that. You're not going to have that bacterial contamination go wild and be able to really develop and get in and then cover all of the, and, you know, essentially contaminate all of the produce. So we recommend using half a teaspoon of bleach in 6 gallons of water, which is essentially equivalent to 5 parts per million. Now, next slide. Those of you who are organic growers need to realize that there is an exemption. You know, chlorine is not a compound that you normally would associate with organic production, but there is an exemption. California Certified Organic Farmers specifically modified the threshold to permit 10 parts per million of residual chlorine measured downstream. So that's after you've washed your produce and you can measure the parts per million of chlorine in that. Still is a residual of 10 parts per million, and this is okay for certified organic farms. Okay, next slide. Common sense again, transporting produce. You don't want to transport produce in the back of a pickup truck that just recently hauled manure. So keep all of those things clean as much as possible. And if you also, if you can, have the container, specific container, so it separates it from the vehicle where the transportation is occurring. The rules, the next slide, state that if you're going to pack and sell things wholesale, it needs to be in a standard pack, and it has to be new boxes. I know a lot of farmers reuse boxes. Those boxes better be awful clean, and they all look new if they're not new, but the requirement is, the legal requirement is that they are new boxes. So you got boxes that are contaminated, don't use those boxes. All right, next slide. Traceability is an important issue regarding food safety. Next one, why is traceability important? Well, I mean, it's obvious. If something is contaminated, we have to be able to remove that product from the food chain and get it out of there so it doesn't hurt anybody else. Next slide, how to ensure traceability. We need to make sure that we have one link back and one link forward from the suppliers to the customers. So you have to record where that produce came from. And depends on the size of your farm, how you might do that, and then also the outlet to where your products are going, how you might do that. So you need to record the harvest date, put it on the, you know, also label the farm or the field where it came from, and the date that it was harvested. Next slide. And you should have on your farm map, again, this needs to be maintained and updated so that you have, you know, what is in what fields, and you basically need to train your farm personnel, especially your harvest crews, and code things, okay, such and such a field with broccoli is being harvested on such and such a day and going into these boxes, and we need to record that with the field numbers and the harvest bins. Now, if you've got your really small-scale farming, you just got a half acre and it's a certain section of the field, well, you need to record, though, that I harvested broccoli from my farm today. It came from this area of the farm, and how many boxes were harvested and where that was sold. Next slide. So if you're selling to farmers markets, you need to have harvest date, field number, and, of course, the crop, and then, of course, the market name and the date of when that product was harvested and where it was sold. Next slide. For a CSA, of course, your CSA customers know who you are, so they know how to get a hold of you. But if you're harvesting from multiple fields, you need to, again, have the harvest date, field number on the box, and it needs to be recorded by the delivery date for your CSA. And now if your CSA is sourcing from other farms, then you need to have what farm that was from. And then, of course, those farms are going to have to maintain their traceability records of where they got that produce. Next slide, traceability for farm stands. Again, you have to have your name, contact information. The best way to do it is just put it right on the receipt and record harvest date in the field for each specific crop. And also, again, if you're sourcing from other places, you need to record the date and the source of where that that produce came from. Okay, next slide, traceability for wholesale. This is a little bit more complicated, but at least in California, you need to have a standard container for each specific crop. You need to have your farm name and location printed on a sticker somewhere, date on there, either the actual date or Julian date, and then the name of the crop, the pack, the grade, and the size. This could be stamped on there or handwritten. Here's an example on the next slide. You can see this is cherries. They've got 12 two-pound bags. They're big cherries. It's got some other information there. 10 row size and so many pounds net for that box. So that's important information. The next slide shows at the end of each packing day, you need to have records and information put onto those boxes as a usually as a code, and then you need to know, you need to record where that was shipped, of course, and the shipping date. The next one shows a small-scale farm, and of course the name, address, and phone. This is a sticker that's either stapled or glued or taped or something onto the end of the box, so that again, you know, there's a traceability, name, address, and phone number there. And next slide. The bottom line here is that products have to be able to be traced back to their source, again, so that there is no problem, and those products can, if there is a problem, can be removed and really prevent it from getting any worse. Okay, let's go to the next slide. Now let's review where we are here. I've essentially covered number one here, common sense, good agricultural practices. So clean water, no waste problems out there, no wildlife problems out there, and you've trained your workers, you've got a traceability program, and hopefully you've documented a lot of this stuff. And the documentation comes in the next couple of bullets there, or number two and number three, and really number four, if you want to take it to the third party, to develop a food safety plan for your farm. And the next slide shows the beginning page of this farm safety manual. It is a farm safety manual because it includes some other things, equipment and pesticide safety and a couple of other things, but it's really primarily a food safety manual. And you can download this. The resources are listed on the end, I think the last slide here, and then also at the end of this presentation, there's a something that you can download that has the websites for this. We inadvertently left it off here, but you'll be able to get that later. But essentially what you can do is you can download this farm safety manual or food safety manual that includes a lot of these good agricultural practices. We just called it ABC Farms, and this is a template. It's a Word document, so you can go in, instead of ABC Farms, you put the name of your farm in there, and then it goes through and asks you a bunch of questions, and of course, you just highlight and delete the questions at the end of it after you've answered the questions, but you're going to fill out your name and indicate that you know, food safety is an integral part of my entire operation. Attaches the map, so you've got the map in there, this number of acres, maybe describe it a little bit. Here's my traceability program. This is how I number my fields, how I number my boxes, how I keep records as to where those produce is going. Here's my information about my general operating procedures as far as worker health and hygiene, how I train those employees, and how I train those workers. And I've documented that. If I have a specific illness and accident prevention program, I train my workers that if they're sick, or if I find sick workers, I find other things for them to do, or certainly get them out and away from handling any types of produce. This is what I do for general sanitation. This is how I keep my containers clean. This is how I make sure chemicals aren't getting into and contaminating my fields. You may have a pesticide use example in there also. My water has been tested. Here's the example of my samples of my water tests and what they indicate, the testing criteria. This is what I've done to exclude wildlife and livestock from my fields. If I've applied any manures or compost, this is the records of those manures and compost and when they were applied. Do I have anything nearby, any livestock or any type of contamination nearby, and what I've done to prevent that from getting onto my fields? Anything else that, you know, how I transport produce and make sure that everything is clean. So that template is actually a very useful item. And I suggest all of you, as small-scale farmers, download that template and begin to look at it. It's a basic tool that you can use that essentially gives you the minimum of what you would need to get through either self-certification audit or a third-party audit later on. Okay, next slide. So that template shows, you know, I mean, I basically just went through it, but it's a place for you to put down and document all these different things, what you've done. The next slide. shows you know, that you've got some type of a written traceability, a policy as well, and what that policy is. Really already described that. Next slide. Now you can take it to the next step and actually self-certify. So you kind of go through a mock audit, or you kind of audit yourself, really. All right, let's say an inspector comes in and they start asking some of these questions. How am I going to respond to this? And what do I have documented that shows that I have, in fact, gotten my water tested, I've trained my workers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So do you have all your paperwork in order? Now, if you want to take it to the next step and actually go to a third-party audit, go to the next slide. This is just an example I've got up here, a USDA audit, which is where USDA officer would come in and actually go through and audit your farm. And the next slide shows just an example here of one portion of a USDA audit verification. This one happens to be worker health and hygiene, and asks a number of questions there, and it's got a point system. So you need to have a certain number of points in order to be able to pass this audit, and they're going to ask you, would ask you specific questions as listed here, and then either give you those points or not. You know, one of the questions is, have you trained your workers? Let's see the documentation that you've trained your workers. Okay, I see their signatures here. Okay, you get all the points for that. And that essentially is a way to become certified. The next slide lists the number of third-party auditors. There are a number of these, and all of the ones here listed are from California. And I'm sure that other states have other third-party auditors. The next slide shows the number of resources that you can go to, and includes that list of other third-party auditors. There's a number of websites here for Good Agricultural Practices, USDA, California Department of Food and Agriculture. The last one is my UC Cooperative Extension Office in Sonoma County that has a lot of information specifically for small-scale farmers. A lot of the farm advisors in their specific counties have information about food safety on their specific websites for those counties. And the last slide here is another resource. University of California has a small farm handbook publication, and Chapter 8, their post-harvest handling and safety of perishable crops, is another resource that goes through a lot of different things that you can do. The University of California website in food safety and also post-harvest handling of produce is a fantastic website that you can go to, and it lists all kinds of information, further information if you want. And that's it for my presentation. You want to go on to the last slide. Do we have any questions? And I'll turn it back to Ramiro.
Thanks, Paul. That was a lot of information presented. And I will apologize right off the bat. I mean, we are pretty much the messenger here trying to help small-scale growers deal with the federal law. We're trying to help you, help growers be proactive and address this issue. And beyond it being a regulation, think of it as a marketing tool that you can use to tap into new markets and to address the concerns of your buyers and or your end consumers if you're selling produce directly. We do have a lot of questions that have come from participants. And as we transition as well, we would like to ask you a few more questions for you, the audience. But first, let's address most of the questions from participants. Paul, can you comment on the difference between the USDA GAP certification and the Global GAP certification? What is there a difference?
I don't know what the difference is. Sorry, I can't comment on that.
Okay, and thanks. So that you know, participants, we will post answers to these questions after the webinar in a Q&A section that we will post on our Ag and Uncertain Times website. So stay tuned, and we'll provide expand on the information presented. Does solid mix require any special food safety steps, and is it considered a processed food?
Solid mix is not considered a processed food, but it's almost always washed as it comes out of the field. You can see one of the slides that I had there. To prevent contamination, we're going to use a certain amount of chlorine per gallon of water there. I have to go back and look at specifically what it is because there are two different things there. But you want to have that water should be treated with chlorine so that you're going to prevent any type of contamination that might be occurring somewhere in there. Where is it here? Okay, washing produce, half a teaspoon of bleach in 6 gallons of water, 5 parts per million of bleach. So that's all that's really necessary for a salad mix.
Okay, great. And a question about irrigation water. If you don't have control over it, how can you prevent contamination? Is there anything you can do to be proactive about it?
Well, if you don't have control of it, there, I don't think there's anything you can do to prevent contamination, but that's one of the most important things you can imagine. If you've got contaminated water and you're using that on produce, I mean, that's just like basic number one. I mean, that was one of the first things we talked about here is water. So you have to find out, you know, what's involved with that water. I mean, the minimum would be as it's coming onto your farm that you take a sample of that and test that and find out. And, of course, if you sample it, test it, and find out that there's no problem, well, then, you know, then you keep a record of that, and it's not a problem. But if you test it and you find out that it is a problem, then you really better go back and find out where that water is coming from and deal with that source of contamination.
Thank you. Yeah, I think producers should at least be aware and have a baseline of information that's part of their farm plan, you know, where the water quality is at before, you know, so that they know what remedial actions to take. One other question, Paul, regarding CSAs and fields and the field identification, would you put all the different field numbers for all the various produce in a CSA box inside the box? Or is it just to have the plan with the field? That information is not necessarily sent to consumers.
That's not information that needs to go to your CSA consumers. That's information that you need to keep a record of. So the traceability essentially is if there's some type of a problem in one of those CSA boxes, it's going to come back to you, and then you need to be able to go, okay, where did that come from? Where did that produce come from? So you don't need to put on into the produce box that goes to the consumer all of that information. Basically, just your name and phone number and your address. I mean, they're going to know that already because they're a member of your CSA.
And one other question: Are you aware of any low cost certification services available or resources to tap into that small scale farmers for small scale farmers with limited income?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Low-cost certification for limited-income farmers. I know here in the state, the California Department of Food and Ag got a grant to help growers offset the cost of certification, and they offered a $200 kind of a subsidy for people who wanted to do that, but I'm not aware of any other states doing the same with what's going on outside of California here.
Is that for third-party certification?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not aware of any low-cost you'd have to contact that list of all those different third-party certifiers and find out what they charge to do that. I mean, the basic idea here, what I just presented, is that, and this is why all the small-scale farmers got together in California and produced this PowerPoint presentation and why we're presenting this today. If you follow, as a farmer, if you follow these common sense ideas here, you've got clean water, you keep waste out of there, you train your workers so that waste and these bacteria aren't getting on the produce, the containers are clean. By and large, you're not going to have a problem. And if you look, you know, in general at the must be millions of pounds of produce that's picked and shipped every day, and people aren't getting sick every day. I mean, it's not to say that it's not a problem. Of course it's a problem, and we want to prevent the problem, but these basic common sense guidelines are going to go a long way to preventing any problem. And then if you download this template and take that and fill that out and document what you've done, that, again, is taking it to the next step. You've gone a long way for self-certification. I think that's going to meet the requirements for quite a few for quite a few things, and possibly even including down the road where grocery stores or farmers markets or schools are going to say, well, what's your farm safety planning? Say, look, I've got something right here. This is what we do, and I think it's going to satisfy a lot of people.
And chances are that very small-scale, limited income farmers may be exempted for third-party certification. And I know at least here in my jurisdiction, San Diego County, there are some produce distributors who are helping producers offset the cost of certification if they mandate it. So if you provide a unique product to them, they will help us, you know, defray some of the cost. One other question, Paul, regarding set-aside or setback. If you find fecal matter in the field during harvest, what is the suggested set-aside, and is there any difference between crops? Does it vary by crop?
I'm not aware of any specific number. I know that for organic certification, the specific setbacks are 25 feet. That makes a lot of sense. It's, you know, it's not onerous. 25 feet isn't that much. You know, bacteria aren't magically just going to jump over, you know, unless there is, you know, some way of dispersal through, you know, sprinklers or water or something like that. So I don't know any specific numbers, but that's the general guideline that I would use.
And one final question before we let you go. Are these guidelines discussed, that we discussed today, applicable to all states?
Well, mostly, we're in California here, you know, sort of, you know, we grow a lot of produce and we produce a lot of stuff here, and so we've looked specifically at California. I would ask that question specifically to maybe some of your local extension agents, for those of you who are outside of California, and get them to respond to that. I really don't know what the rules and regulations are in these different states.
Well, my comment to that would be that these regulations are part of the Food Safety Modernization Act, which is a federal law, and from that perspective, they do apply, the regulations apply to pretty much all states. How each individual state is dealing or helping producers within that, their state boundary is a deal with this, is a different story, but, and for that, they should contact their State Department of Ag or a local cooperative extension and see what resources are there available locally for them to help.
Well, just as an example, here in California, we have some different state laws, and then, of course, every county has a county health department. Those county health departments may have further restrictions. So I think you're right. Yes, in general, this is going to cover, this is federal, this is common sense stuff. But there may be some specifics in your specific county or your specific state.
One last question. Can you discuss, give some examples of good practices, and if specifically with regards to produce washing, can you elaborate a bit on that?
Well, first of all, if the produce doesn't need washing, don't wash it. I mean, there are a number of things that, as far as I'm concerned, you would never wash. You would never wash raspberries or blackberries or strawberries. You're just, you know, asking for problems that don't need to exist. Temperature management and temperature control is extremely important, and that's why I would suggest a lot of you go to the website that goes to the UC Davis post-harvest handling. These bacteria multiply very rapidly under warm temperature conditions. So if you can get temperatures down, of course, it's not only going to be a food safety issue, but it's going to help maintain the quality of your produce a lot better as well. And then if you are using wash water to wash anything, that water be treated with chlorine. I think that is going to go a long way to preventing even a small amount of contamination getting out and spreading and getting all over the rest of the produce. And then, of course, just the common sense things of, you know, let's keep everything clean. Let's wash the baskets and the containers. And if there's a packing tables and things like that, let's make sure that is all washed and clean, doesn't have any dirt in it. Rotten produce is removed and cleaned off of that. And basically just keep everything really, really clean. And then, of course, a lot of the other things that I talked about, you know, the worker health and safety and hygiene and then the livestock things and wildlife. I mean, there was a question up here about, you know, common sense things for wildlife. it is just common sense. You can't prevent everything, but you also wouldn't go into a field that has all kinds of droppings. Now, droppings here or there, of course, that's not a problem. But if it's really bad, then that is a potential problem.
Thank you, Paul. In the interest of time, we are going to stop asking questions. There are other questions that were left unanswered, and we will try to answer those and post them to the website. So, Paul, thanks for a lot of good information, and I couldn't emphasize enough the idea of common sense. My belief is that most growers are already doing a lot of the good agricultural practices that were mentioned in the presentation today. What's required now is that we document those and put them together, you know, in the form of a plan. So thanks, Paul, again. We've seen a lot of interest on this topic, and if there is any specific area of today's webinar that you would like to see covered in future webinars or related topics, please let us know. Use the Q&A chat in your monitor, and we will try to address those concerns in future webinars.
Okay, thank you. Bye, everybody.
For more information, all the slides presented today and a recorded version of the audio and also a downloadable audio file will be available on our website at agriuncertaintimes.farmmanagement.org. So follow that link. And we also have put together a document that has all the links to the web pages that we mentioned throughout the presentation today. We ask you that you click on the highlighted bar on the file share window that posted on your monitor and download that file to your computer. Just click on the bar and download to your computer, and that way you will have access to all the web pages that were mentioned throughout today's presentation. That is all we had this morning. We thank you for participating. We appreciate the interest, and we hope to have you join us in future webinars. Thanks so much, and have a great day.